Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoking the reefer.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah. No, that's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gems. It's my goal every week to come up with a new way of saying gentlemen. So this week is gems. Welcome back to the Police Academy podcast. Today is an interview with Patrick Fitzgibbons of the CJ Evolution podcast. I will say it wrong in my intro introducing him. I say CJ podcast. It's CJ Evolution podcast. Great interview. Patrick is a great podcast host. I encourage you to go check out his show as well. But we talk about balancing work life as a police officer and your personal life and the struggles there and how officers can do better at that. We also discuss the fact that Norway just armed its police officers in response to the Stockholm, Sweden attack. And, you know, if this is going to be a trend in European countries with their law enforcement officers who traditionally are not armed, and we discuss the idea of warning shots, because the IACP has recently announced or supported this idea that departments should allow their officers to fire warning shots. So we talk about that. That's at the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that. Also, of course, stay tuned for the show review of the day. I will read another one of those in the outro. And last but not least, go check out audibletrial.com/policeacademypodcast. And search for Black Rednecks and White Liberals. It's by Thomas Sowell. It's an amazing book. I'm mentioning it again because I know not everyone listens to every episode. I've mentioned it before. I'm not done with it yet. It's like a 10-hour or so book, but it has completely shattered my understanding of race in America and why we see what we see today. Amazing book. Go check that out. audibletrial.com/policeacademypodcast will get you there. It will get you a free audiobook and a free trial of Audible. And of course, both of those are very awesome things. audibletrial.com/policeacademypodcast. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, ladies and gents, to the Police Academy podcast. Today, I'm sitting here with Patrick Fitzgibbons of the CJ Evolution podcast. Patrick is a veteran police officer with approximately 20 years of experience in a variety of roles. Patrick holds an MBA in business and a master's in organizational leadership and is a lifelong learner. He's a professor in higher education and is dedicated in educating the next generation of law enforcement professionals. He is also the co-founder of TrackQ, a software company that retains and keeps track of certifications, training, and equipment for the user. Patrick enjoys spending time with his wife, Jennifer, and his children, outdoor activities, and of course, being the host of the CJ podcast, which I was recently on. If you haven't checked that episode out, I will link to it again in the show notes here. But Patrick, thank you so much for joining.
Hey, Terrence, thank you for allowing me to come on to your show, and I love it. It's great. I listen to it all the time.
Awesome. So we talked when I came onto your show a little bit. It wasn't really the core focus of the show, but we touched on this idea of how officers really need to be intentional about creating balance in their life. So can you kind of just explain what you mean when you say balance? Just define it, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I think, you know, as police officers and first responders out there, you know, we're in this constant state of hypervigilance, you know, all the time. And we have to be, Terrence, you know, that's what keeps us alive when we're on duty. But what we need to do better when we're off duty is kind of disengage. I believe, and have more balance. I mean, there's our work life, which is fine. It's important. It's a big part of who we are. You know that. You were a police officer for a long time. But when we get off duty, we need to have a balance and spend time with our families more. And I speak from experience. Mm-hmm. You know, for many years, I was on patrol. And the only thing I wanted to do when I came home was just chill out and veg, you know, working, you know, night shift. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with various shift work. You know, you just kind of want to come home and you want to decompress. And, you know, that's I still do that today, but I have a better balance with my work life and my professional and my personal life. I'm sorry, because I try not to bring it home. I mean, and that's a problem with so many officers is, you know, they think they live, breathe law enforcement. And I want to be clear here. I mean, I love law enforcement. I love police officers. I have nothing but respect for criminal justice professionals. I'm one. But when I'm done with work, I'm done with work. You know, unless it's earth shattering and my pager goes off and I have to make a call, I will. Well, my time is with my family and my relationships with my kids, with my wife has really improved because of that. So, you know, balance is one of those, you know, it's kind of, for me, it's hard to define, but it's just, you know, it's just having that equilibrium between work and professional life or personal life. I'm sorry.
Right. Well, I asked that question starting out because I'm a huge believer in balance. One of my kind of mantras is balance in everything. Mm-hmm. And I got some pushback from a friend the other day. And she said, it's not balance. It's harmony, which sounds really foo-foo. But basically, I was like,
just semantics.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with balance. Yeah, it's just semantics. But really, the idea behind, you know, what she's saying is, no, it's harmony, is because it's not balance in every moment. You know, when you go to work as an officer, you're in an environment where you are, you know, a hypervigilant environment. You're constantly kicking in fight or flight. And it's very high stress, and you have to kind of be in a certain mode when you're mm-hmm. there. That's not balanced, but that's required, and that's good.
That keeps us alive.
That keeps you alive. But when you go home, you have to, you know, as you're saying, you have to be able to decompress and step out of that mental state and really enter back into normal civilian life, which is very difficult to do. Again, that's not necessarily... That's more balanced for sure. But when we say balance, and really I'm pointing this out to the audience, when we say balance, we're not saying that life has to just be even keel all the time. It's that overall the broader picture needs to be balanced. You don't want to come home as an officer and be thinking about work and talking about work and only hanging out with work buddies all the time because you're not letting yourself separate from that pretty toxic environment.
Exactly. And Terrence, when you were on the job, I mean, how many people did you know that never took vacations or they rarely took time? I mean, I know plenty of people like that, where their vacation time is just, you know, it just rolls over every year because there's a certain point where you could roll over. They live and breathe it. And again, I'm not saying that's, you have to do that when you're working. But, you know, we have our profession or law enforcement have one of the highest rates of suicide. They have one of the highest rates of heart disease, obesity. And the reason is, now I'm not blaming the job for that, but, you know, we have to be able to take care of ourselves. We have to, when we're off duty, we have to be able to getting into other things, you know, spending time with our family, meditating. I'm a huge fan of meditation. I mean, people laugh at me sometimes, but yes, I meditate every morning for at least 10 minutes. And that has really helped me, you know, whether it's harmonious or balanced, whatever you want to call it. I mean, we need to kind of, when we're off duty, we spend so much time so much of our lives at work. Mm-hmm. We need to be spending more time, you know, with what really matters. You know, when we're on our deathbed, Terrence, you and I, I don't think I'm going to say, you know, I should have spent more time on the job pushing around a car. Mm-hmm. You know, I should have spent more time, you know, at work. Nobody says that. What do they say? They say, I should have spent more time with the things that matter, the people that matter in my life, my wife, my kids. And I'm not saying there's plenty of officers that do it right now, but I think there are more officers out there need to be doing it.
Right. And I don't think that is unique to law enforcement. I, in fact, I know it's not. I've worked in other industries. where that type of just workaholic, I guess we could call it, type of mentality exists. I mean, that's in any place that you go. The difference is, obviously, you're doing that in the corporate world. That's one thing. And it's still not good for you. And you might find yourself on the deathbed saying the same thing. I wish I would have spent more time with the people that mattered. But you do that as a police officer, and you're going to say that, but you're going to be in a very different and much darker place by that time, because the job is very different. So how do you, you mentioned meditation, and we can dig into that too. you know, we've talked about this on your show. I do that as well. I learned this one from Tim Ferriss and all of the amazing people he has on his show. I mean, it's a huge, huge force multiplier. I'll let you kind of talk about why you meditate and just the effects of it, what you see in your life.
Well, like you, Terrence, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Tim Ferriss and other people, John Maxwell, you know, Lewis Howes, another big, I'm a huge fan of Lewis Howes. And
yep, I like basically, him too.
Yeah, I mean, and I just got into meditation based on the, you know, what I was listening to in the books I was reading. I mean, I just decided, you know, hey, one day, about a year and a half ago, I just downloaded an app called Headspace. There's plenty of apps out there. It's pretty self-explanatory. And I just started doing it. And it was kind of awkward at first because you really, I mean, you know, you really have to, you know, train your mind. And I'm not an expert by any means, but I really started doing it and really, you know, making a cognizant effort to do it every day. And of course I miss a day or two, but it really clears my mind. You know, I get up really early in the morning. I'm usually up by about 4:30. I go work out, you know, not every day, but most days. And, you know, when I'm done working out, I usually go into a dark room and I just meditate for 10 minutes. And that kind of sets the stage for the rest of my day. I'm more energized, I'm more focused. And it really has helped me, you know, coming back around to what we were talking about before, it really has helped me focus more on what's important. And again, I'm not saying the job isn't important. You got to pay the bills. I get it. But it really has benefited me. And everybody's different. Some people might try it, might hate it. I mean, hey, you know, that's, you know, people are different, but it really has benefited me. And I tell young officers when I go, you know, to the academy and I lecture and, you know, students, and some of them look at me like I have two heads, but other people are like, you know, hey, I've heard of that. And it's really cool. So I mean, and this is the thing in law enforcement. I really wish they would be teaching more of this. And again, you don't have to dedicate a whole academy to it. But, you know, we're really good at teaching our officers how to shoot and drive, you know, police cars and handcuff and self-defense. And that's all important. That's a very, very important part of our job. But we really need to spend more time. And I speak from experience because I've taught in academies and I've seen curriculums. We really need to spend more time teaching our officers how to take better care of themselves. And that not only is physically, but mental health too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine there'd be some difficulty getting that started because you either have to cut something out.
Sure.
Right? Or you have to add to that training, which costs money and keeps officers off the road longer. And those are both really sensitive topics.
And here in Colorado, you know, they're kind of like, I mean, like you were in Nebraska, right, Terrence?
Right. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. And so every state's, you know, a little different with their requirements, but you know, every year, cause I'm one of the liaisons for my department with the state, you know, they're like you said, they're always adding stuff, you know, to the requirements and, you know, the mandated stuff that we have to do. And yeah, I agree with you, but you know,
that might be a good path to that. Have the state mandate it.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, I'm just saying to your point. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we have to do on a annual basis, sometimes quarterly basis as far as training. And there's more and more that are every year, but I really do think it's important. And again, that we try to fit something in there, you know, to like what we're talking about. I mean, you know, taking better care of ourselves because, you know, we're really good after the fact, you know, a critical incident. And now we got to give, you know, we got to debrief and you've been through those where, you know, then we, you know, offer counseling, which is important, you know, at least where I'm at. But we really need to do a better job at the front end too. And just getting our officers, you know, in you know, a better mental state, because I think so many officers out there, and I've been there, Terrence, are just, you know, they're burned out, you know, they're just going day by day. They're kind of, you know, they're not getting enough sleep. Think about it. I mean, when, mm-hmm. when, I don't know about you, but when I was on the street, I mean, I was averaging about 3 or 4 hours a night. And that was like, I was working graveyards. I worked graveyards for years. I'm not saying this is everybody who works, you know, graveyards, but it does mess around with your sleep cycles. It's not mm-hmm. good for you.
Right.
Now it's just part of the job, but over a sustained period of 15, 20 years, it's just not good for you. It's going to wreak havoc on everything. Mm-hmm. So, and what's the answer? I don't know, but I think it starts with taking better care of ourselves emotionally, physically, spiritually, you know, and doing things to kind of mitigate those, you know, circumstances of the job.
Right. And I think it definitely also starts just with having these conversations, because there's so exactly. much machoism in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, someone, you talk to someone about meditation and they might mm-hmm. Act like you're weird and respond in one way, but then they go home and actually think about it. And who knows, maybe they start meditating, but they don't tell anybody. I mean, there's mm-hmm. definitely this tough guy, macho mentality in the profession. I think there always will be, because it attracts those mm-hmm. people. But I hope that this conversation just about just overall well-being becomes more prominent in mm-hmm. in the law enforcement community. So,
and we talked really quick, Terrence, about when you were on my show, mm-hmm. we talked about the importance, and I really do believe this, of having friends outside of law enforcement. I really do think, and again, I'm not trying to say get rid of all your law enforcement friends, because they're your brothers and sisters, and you know, you guys have been through stuff together. I get it. But I think it's really, really important to have friends outside of law enforcement. When I got married for the second time, you know, my wife, you know, had nothing to do. She has no idea what cops do. No, you know, no idea what law enforcement, you know, did or does. She only gets what she knows, like most people, off TV and the movies. But my point in all that is, you know, her friends slowly became my friends. Not all of them, but a good chunk of them. And you know, we're almost trained in law enforcement, at least I was, and I'm sure you were, Terrence, you know, in the academy. We're groomed at a very young age that, you know, if you're not a cop, you know, we don't trust you. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying there's not some bad people out there. Of course there are. We have to be hypervigilant. But not everybody out there is a criminal. Mm-hmm. And I had that view when I was a younger officer, where, you know, if you weren't a cop, I wouldn't talk to you. And that's not a good place to be. Because there's, I really do, the older I get, the more I realize the majority of people out there are just good people. Yeah, there's a lot of bad people, but the majority of people are good. Mm-hmm. And not everybody that you roll up on is a criminal.
Right.
You know, and I really got a better grasp of that when I started hanging around people that were outside of law enforcement. And again, I'm not bashing law enforcement. I'm just saying you gotta have people outside of law enforcement, at least in my opinion. Because they bring a different perspective. Mm-hmm. It's good to learn. I've learned so much from people outside of law enforcement. And again, it's benefited me tremendously. And I think it would benefit other people, because, right. you know, I mean, when you're getting around, you know, cops all day, which is fine. What are you telling? You're just telling cop stories and stuff. And I remember, you know, starting to meet some of my wife's friends, it's like, wow, we're not talking about police work. And I kind of like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, wow. I mean, we're talking about other stuff. We're talking about, you know, whatever, art, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So I like it. And, you know, I still, you know, I have a pager, I have my phone. If the guys need me where I work, and, you know, they're always welcome to call. But, you know, like I said, I enjoy my time off. I value it more than ever. And I just think more officers need to do that.
People just don't understand, and it's not their fault, but the way the world changes when mm-hmm. you become a police officer, you literally live in a different world because you see it from a different perspective, mm-hmm. and you surround yourself with people who think that way, and then you eventually will lose sight of the perspective that you had before you became a police officer.
Exactly.
And so having that balance with who you're around and surrounding yourself with is really important, to be able to relate to the people that you're actually there to protect and serve. Yes, that's cliche. Yes, you mostly are dealing with people who, you know, are committing crimes a lot of times, or well, that's not necessarily true. They need help in some way, but you deal with a lot of bad guys. Okay. But keeping sight of the fact that many of the people, most of the people that you deal with aren't actually bad people, may not be committing a crime. They're just normal, everyday people.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you can't relate to those people, that's definitely not not a good thing.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, many years I had that us against them mentality, and it's still prevalent within law enforcement. And again, I'm not, in some circumstances you have to have that, but you have to be able to turn it off. You know, it's not everybody's a criminal. You know, not everybody that comes up to you wants to kill you or take a punch at you. I mean, there's a lot of good people out there, but you have to change your mindset. You know, when you have it turned on, it's on, you know, and you have to keep that guard up in some circumstances. I get it. And I'm not saying that not to do that, but you have to be able to turn it off and realize again that it's just that perspective. No, not everybody out there is a criminal. Mm-hmm. You just have to, again, balance, whatever, in harmony or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm so glad I've gotten to that place in my life, and a lot of it is Terrence, through, you know, just what I'm putting in my body, meaning, you know, what I'm reading and what I'm absorbing. And you mentioned Tim Ferriss. There are so many, I call them, you know, they're mentors of mine, even though I've never met them. But I mean, I look up to these people, and, you know, I mean, they just really have such a good positive message out there, you know. And, you know, for many years, I was very cynical. I was very negative. And you know, when I started just kind of absorbing some of these you know, great leaders and people out there that are just pushing out a positive message, Tim Ferriss, Lewis House, all these other people out there, you know, it really has helped me tremendously with my mindset, you know. And like I said, you know, just keeping an open mind and, you know, trying to remain positive and, you know, realizing that everybody out there is not a bad person.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say your top, say, 3 or 5 techniques or tips that you would give to an officer or someone that is getting into law enforcement to maintain that balance? Obviously, we've talked about several of them: meditation, who you're hanging around with, who you're learning from, the books you're reading, etc. Are there any others that you think people need to consider?
Well, just keep an open mind. You know, I mean, you have to just keep an open mind and realize, like we've been talking about, I mean, not everybody out there is a criminal. Yeah, there's a lot of bad people, but keep an open mind. And we also talked about, I think, you know, just hanging out with the right people and surrounding yourself, you know, with the right people. You know, there's a saying out there that you're the average of the 5 people you associate with.
Right.
You and I both know that there's people out there that train law enforcement officers that shouldn't be training law enforcement officers. I think it starts first and foremost with the FTOs. Now, sometimes, you know, a young officer, they don't have their choice. I mean, they're going to go where they're being told. But, you know, I mean, hopefully law enforcement officials out there, the people are in charge of putting people in field training, you know, roles as FTOs, they're putting the right people in those roles. And I always tell people, Terrence, I mean, you know, are there bad cops out there? Yes, there are bad cops. You've probably seen some. I have. But the majority of people out there are good. But there are bad cops that shouldn't wear the badge, and they shouldn't be training new, you know, officers that are very influential. So, as far as tips, you know, I would just say, you know, keep that open mind. You take care of your body and your mind, like we've talked about. You know, surrounding yourself with, you know, good positive role models, because so much of what we do or see in this profession, like you said, you know, people don't call the cops when things are great. People call the cops, and we show up when things are bad, for the most part. And we see the worst of human nature, and that plays with you. I mean, I know you've seen some bad stuff. I have, and that gets to you, and that sticks with you. But we can't just get engrossed in that. We can't just, you know, there has to be some outlets. There has to be some positive outlets to that, where we can talk to people and we can do other things and we can exercise and we can meditate or we can do whatever. But we have to be able to, you know, just get involved in other things. So that would be my message. I know we covered a lot of that, so I don't have any really new tips, but that's my message that kind of centers around all that, what we talked about.
Awesome. Speaking of perspective, I want to kind of change gears here a little bit. The perspective of law enforcement in other countries, namely Europe, we're talking about specifically, is very different from that of American law enforcement. and it is completely foreign. I had this guy named Bobby. He's actually a British Bobby. That's what they call him there on the show. And it was an interesting conversation just because we can't really understand life in each other's shoes. And I think the most obvious difference there is the fact that most European law enforcement entities don't carry firearms, at least the normal patrol officers don't. Can you imagine doing what police officers do without the option of deadly force with you?
You know, I can't, but let's put things into perspective a little bit. First of all, you know, we're a relatively new country, Terrence, when it comes to, you know, European countries. I mean, most countries are a heck of a lot older than the United States. So that is just ingrained in their culture. I mean, that is just how they are. I mean, like the, you know, over in England, there's other countries that, you know, their police forces are, you know, do pretty much the same thing, but they have access to weapons. We saw that in the recent tragedy over in England where that guy was, you know, running around stabbing people. And luckily they were, I think, in an area where law enforcement was armed and they were able to take this guy out. But to your question, no, I couldn't imagine, you know, being in an environment like that, but that's what, because you and I, that's what we grew up with, you know, that's how we were taught. And that's what we were, you know, a law enforcement officer in the United States is associated with having, you know, weapons. I mean, some type of weapons. So, right. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the age of our country too. And then we have so many laws in the books. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but you know, we're a relatively new country compared to like other countries.
Well, I'm sure there's probably some truth to that. I'll push back a little bit because we got our system from England.
Sure.
I think the likely major difference that creates our mentality as law enforcement officers who, you know, we feel like we have to carry firearms is just the prevalence of firearms in our society. I mean,
I would agree with that.
That's an obvious difference between our countries. Mm-hmm. But with this Stockholm, Sweden attack, you know, it's a vehicle attack. We've seen it in France. There was one in London that you just mentioned. You know, and France has had some much more extensive attacks with bombs and you know, assault weapons, et cetera. And after this Stockholm attack, Norway apparently is deciding to arm their officers. And it sounds like it's an immediate mandate that all of their patrol officers are now going to be armed, at least for the time being. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just kind of wonder, and this is something that I asked Bobby, you know, is do we think or do we see that moving that way? The Europeans starting to kind of follow suit and arm their officers. I know there's probably just as much cultural resistance both within and without the law enforcement communities to that. Just like if you were to say, you know, American police officers, we want to take your guns away, you know, you'd have a riot and no one to stop it. But I think I'm sure there's plenty of resistance there. I just kind of wonder, you know, if we're headed that direction for the Europeans.
You know, I don't know. I'm a bit, that's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, they're going to do what they need to do. They're going to do what they think they need to do to protect their citizenry, you know, and if that includes arming their police officers, then so be it. I mean, I think, you know, having armed police officers is a deterrent because you know what, the criminals know the cops aren't armed. So I think in some ways it is a deterrent. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's not going to solve all your crime. I mean, there's plenty of crime, you know, even with armed officers. But I think, like I said, those countries are going to do what they have to do to protect their themselves. I mean, and you mentioned like England, look in the last, you know, France, I mean, horrific terrorist, you know, attacks, you know, I mean, Stockholm. I mean, so I think it's a natural response. And I agree with you 100%, Terrence, when you said, you know, we have way too many guns in this country. I agree with you. My wife and I have this discussion all the time. But I think it's just a natural response. And whether or not, you know, other countries are going to follow suit, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
All right. Well, let's move on to warning shots, because the IACP, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, for those that aren't familiar with it, just released a recommendation that officers or that agencies allow their officers to provide warning shots. Mm-hmm. And for those who aren't familiar with this, when you go to the academy, you learn how to be a police officer. The standard when it comes to deadly force is that you're either using deadly force or you're not. There is no, you know, putting a shot across the bow. I actually made a video about this a while back, kind of explaining why we don't do this. But it is ingrained, deeply ingrained in our culture, in the law enforcement culture, that warning shots, shots to wound, that kind of thing are not acceptable. So this is a huge shift. This is this is a big thing for American law enforcement officers, this idea of, well, now we're going to be expected possibly to use warning shots.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
When you're talking about any use of force, you're familiar with Graham versus Connor, Supreme Court case. Any kind of force is going to be based on what they call objective reasonableness. Mm-hmm. You know, was it reasonable? And when you were just talking about this, I was like, is it reasonable for a police officer to? What about the obvious question? Is it the backdrop? Or we talked about this before we started recording, Terrence. That bullet's got to go somewhere, right?
Right.
So the idea of shooting warning shots to me is it's not reasonable. Now maybe there's some of you out there, or you know, some people that might think it is reasonable. But we as law enforcement officers are not trained that way. We are not trained to give warning shots or shoot in the leg to wound. And the obvious question is, what happens? We're trained to stop the threat, right? Mm-hmm. Stop the threat. Mm-hmm. Students sometimes say, well, are you guys trained to kill? No, we don't. We're trained to stop the threat. It just so happens that all our body functions, all the main stuff that keep us alive is where? In the
mass.
Chest, yeah. In center mass, in the head, you know, the computer. And that's what we are taught or we're taught to aim at. I can't imagine officers now being trained or being taught to shoot in the leg. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. What is your extremities are targets that are very hard to hit. Imagine a moving target. You know, I mean, are you going to be able to hit somebody who it's a life and death situation? Mm-hmm. They're coming at you with a knife, and now we have something that says, oh, we got to shoot to wound. What happens? Well, I mean, what happens if it doesn't work? What happens if you miss?
Right.
I mean, and now you indicated that officers, I mean, that's an option for officers, but I can't see how any officers or at least senior officials within law enforcement is thinking that that's a good idea.
Right.
I don't know if they're just succumbing to political pressure or, I mean, I just don't know what it is.
That's my fear. I'm just afraid that they've allowed this idea simply as kind of a, you know, trying to appease. And, you know, to me, the idea of a warning shot is just opening Pandora's box. It allows, it opens the door for all kinds of problems, because once you say, okay, you can use deadly force in a warning capacity, then every time the police are always getting, accused of wrongdoing regardless of whether there was any anyways. But every time then that they use deadly force, the question is going to be, well, did you provide a warning shot? No. Mm-hmm. Well, why didn't you provide a warning shot? You could have. How come you chose not to? Did you just want to kill the, you know what I mean? You can see that line of reasoning, that line of questioning, and that vilification of an officer who was defending their life. So you open the door to not only that, but just this, okay, we started talking about shooting to wound. Well, they're not talking about that. They're just talking about warning shots. But opening the door to warning shots then opens the door to shooting to wound, because it's like, okay, well, if we create a spectrum of deadly force, which that's kind of how I see it, now we have a warning shot at the very bottom end of that spectrum. We have shooting to wound higher up, and then we have shooting to quote unquote stop the threat or kill. You know, here's the thing. When we talk about shooting to stop the threat or do we shoot to kill? To me, again, it's semantics. The honest truth is if this is how I see it, I won't speak for anybody else, but police officers, when you have a deadly force threat coming at you, when you're shooting at that threat, you are shooting to kill that threat, because stopping the threat means killing it. I mean, that's the honest truth. Yes, you could stop the threat, potentially incapacitate them and they could survive. But so the intent isn't, again, not necessarily to kill, but by shooting to stop the threat, you're basically saying shoot to kill. It's typically one and the same. I mean, the end result is usually the same. But yeah, I just think this warning shot idea is problematic.
Maybe it's great if you're in a field, Terrence, but what do you do if you're in a neighborhood and you elect to do a warning shot? Well, my obvious question, where the hell is the bullet going?
Yeah.
I mean, it's what happens if it hits a house? What happens if it hits a bystander? The plethora of questions it seems like somebody came up with this and said, yeah, it's a good idea, you know, just give a warning shot to somebody. But they're not thinking about just basic ballistics, you know, and you know, firearms, you know, trajectory and all that stuff. It's got to come down somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, I don't understand the reasoning behind it. You know, given about warning shots, you know, when I used to be on a shoot team with my department. It was a collaboration. You know, when there's a critical incident, an officer involved shooting, usually what happens is there's a collection of agencies within the county that come together. Usually they're detectives. I was a detective at the time. And we come together and we investigate it, you know, whatever agency was involved. And the reason is because you want different perspectives. You just don't want to have your own agency investigating a shooting of one of their officers. So I remember one shooting I got paged out for. It was an officer in a sister jurisdiction that pulled over a car at about 3 o'clock in the morning. He thought it was a DUI. So officer, you know, lights the guy up, guy goes into a parking lot. And before the officer even adjusts his spotlight, he adjusts the spotlight on the car, barely gets that out. Guy comes out of the car with an AR-15, starts lighting the officer up. The officer was able somehow, by the grace of God, to get out of his car and start returning fire. Now, the officer was able to finally take this guy down. Didn't kill him, but he was able to get some shots that incapacitated this guy. You know how long that lasted? About 8 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So now we want officers, you know, if it became mandated to give a warning shot, is that reasonable in that situation I just gave you, where officer just barely put his car in park, got his spotlight, and the guy's out? Is he going to say, hold on, guy, before you shoot me, time out, I'm going to give you a warning shot?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just not reasonable. Maybe in some cases it would be. But like you said, I don't like the path that we're going down with this, because I just think it's a slippery slope, you know. And, you know, in those circumstances, there was no word set.
Right.
There was no word set. It was about 8 seconds.
Yeah. And I think that's a clear no. Obviously, there's not any room for a warning shot there. To me, the only way you can allow the idea of warning shots, even just allow it in the conversation, is with some very, very big caveats. And, you know, the stuff that we just talked about, you would have to be in a location where there's zero chance that that bullet is going to hit somebody, which is going to require a pretty static environment, because you have to consider a lot of things to figure out, okay, could this bullet hit somebody? I mean, you'd have to be in a somewhat remote location with, you know, something that the bullet's going to go into and stop safely. And you know that you're not going to hit the person that you're trying to warn. The potential for this to be a safe situation where you could actually give a warning shot safely and have it be effective, that's such a minute chance that that's ever going to happen. I mean, there certainly are circumstances that
sure.
is reasonable, but there's so few and far between. Is it worth allowing it into the conversation?
Yeah. I think, and I haven't read the article, Terrence, and I haven't researched this, but this is just my opinion. I think it's just people just succumbing to political pressure. And yes, there've been some high profile shootings in the last couple of years, some of them horrible shootings. I think you and I talked about that, but the overwhelming majority of shootings have been justified. And some people might not like that, but that's just the way it is. And I think a lot of it has to do with just educating people too. I mean, not mm-hmm. people, I mean, in law enforcement, we know, but I think it's just the public, you know, overall. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I would be teaching a class where the students would say, well, why can't you just shoot the, you know, gun out of the hand? Or, you know, why can't you just shoot the knife out of the hand? First of all, do you think that's even possible?
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible? It's possible in the movies, you know, because it's movies, but I would challenge people to go out to a range, get about, you know, whatever, 10, 15 feet, maybe 5 feet, and see how many times you're going to be able to hit that.
Yeah.
Now, throw in somebody who's moving.
Right.
Moving at you. So it's just, I think a lot of it has to do, and that's what I try to do when I'm teaching. I'm not just, look, you know, everything the cops do is great. I'm not like that, but I try to educate students a little bit more. And this is the way we act. This is the reason why some people, you know, get shot by the police. I mean, we're kind of digressing a little bit, but, you know, some of the people that have got shot in recent years are people that are not complying with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why don't you just do what the officer is telling you to do? And the officer might very well be wrong, but that is not the time and the place to get into some pissing match with the officer.
Right. I haven't seen a case where, you know, someone got shot and killed where they were being 100%
exactly.
cooperative. Charles Kinsey's the closest you can mm-hmm. come to that. And that was an errant shot. I mean, the officer missed who he was shooting at.
Yeah.
That was a disaster all around. But, I mean, show me a case where mm-hmm. an officer shoots and kills someone that was compliant and cooperating with the police. And that doesn't mean that they deserve to die, but this idea that officers are out hunting people
exactly.
For sport is just so ludicrous. It's
and so,
crazy.
And so by that rationale, the people who think that way, you know, I have a wife, children, nice home, nice life, Terrence. So by that rationale is I'm going to put all of that at risk every mm-hmm. day. I'm going to get up, strap on a gun, a badge. You mean to tell me that officers out there get up with the intention of going out there and shooting somebody?
Right.
Really?
Because they know that they could lose all of that if
they know that they can. And I'm not saying, you know, there's a case down in South Carolina. This officer shot a African-American who was running away from the officer was in the wrong. Mm-hmm. He made a stupid mistake. I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the officer had to pay for it, rightfully so. But do you think that officer got up that morning?
Yeah, so Walter, said, I'm gonna go, Walter Scott, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go shoot somebody. No, because now you know what? The when that happened, he had a pregnant wife at home.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he kissed his wife goodbye and, you know, kissed her stomach and said, yeah, I'm going to go out and shoot somebody. I'm going to give it all up. I mean, come on. They're just making, and this is kind of coming back full circle, Terrence, to what I was talking about before. We need to start taking better care of ourselves. We need to start getting better sleep. We need to start eating better. We need to start exercising more. We need to start meditating. We need to start taking better care of ourselves. This job is as stressful as enough as it is. You know, we need to start taking better care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we can make, you know, hopefully, you know, better choice. It all starts with, you know, if you're not getting enough sleep, man, they've done studies on this. 3 or 4 hours of sleep, your reaction time, you're falling asleep. I've been there, unfortunately. I mean, sad to say, I've been, mm-hmm. you know, pushing around a car. Maybe you have, and I had to park because I just can't stay awake.
Yeah. No, I've been there too.
I mean, so we need to start taking better care of ourselves. Now, it's hard. I get it with shift work. Some people are probably listening and saying, okay, well, he doesn't know. You know, he's never worked. Yeah, I have worked graves for years. And I know it's hard, but we need to start, you know, doing better job at getting more sleep.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, Patrick, thanks for coming on today. Is there anywhere that people can reach out to you? Obviously, I'll link to the CJ Evolution podcast. Any other ways that you want people to get in touch with you if they want to?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. You can find me on there. LinkedIn.
Okay.
You know, I'm in a lot of the social media outlets, and the best way to get a hold of me is cjevolution.net. And I just want to thank you, Terrence. I mean, like I said, man, you're doing a great job with your show. I love what you're doing, and you've taught me some things, and I appreciate you letting me come on your show, man.
Yeah, no problem. And for everyone listening, I mean, Patrick has his own podcast. I have my podcast. We're not competitors. You guys can all go and check out his show and learn all kinds of stuff that I'm not talking about here. So, especially if you're you're in law enforcement or you're going to be, I definitely recommend you go check out Patrick's show because he definitely focuses on that audience. So, you know, don't think that there's any sort of loyalty here. If you go to Patrick's show and never come back to mine, I'm okay with that because you're going to learn a lot of great things. So, and you know, you're a great host too, Patrick. So,
well, I appreciate it. And one thing, Terrence, I just wanted to highlight, I don't, you know, with my podcast, I like talking about other things too. And Terrence, you know, I just don't talk about law enforcement issues, and those are very, very important, but I talk about other things like leadership. And, you know, I had a great guest on, you know, last night. Her name is, Carrie Granger, and she's, you know, she was teaches at the Air Force Academy here in Colorado. She was a combat veteran, and now she has her own leadership consulting firm in the private sector. But I had her on because it all ties into law enforcement, and I just touch on other topics that I think are very, very important, just like you. I mean, we're talking about all kinds of important stuff here. So,
yeah.
Awesome. I appreciate it, man.
Yep. No problem. I will link to all of that in the show notes, everybody. Patrick, thank you so much.
Thank you, buddy. You take care.
All right, ladies and gems. Yeah, I just wanted to call you guys gems again. That is it for this episode. Here is the review of the day. This one is titled Excellent Show, Thoughts from a Career Military Member. This one is by The Big Reader 1. I think I know who this might be. And Big Reader writes, quote, "This podcast is a must have. I listen to it on the way to the base. Great work, Terrence." End quote. Thank you so much for that kind review. And back to 5-star this week. So I'm grateful for that. Thank you so much. Don't forget to check out Black Rednecks and White Liberals on Audible. Audibletrial.com/Police Academy Podcast. Search Black Rednecks and White Liberals by Thomas Sowell. Promise you won't regret it. It's an amazing book, at least so far. I'm not done with it yet, but it's got me pretty excited. So you should check it out. Also, of course, check out Patrick's show, the CJ Evolution Podcast. Go over there, tell him hi, and that you came from the Police Academy show. I'm sure he'd love to have you as a member of his audience as well. So go check that out. And that's it. If you haven't done a review, write a review. And I will read it on the show when I get to it. All right. Thanks, guys. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.